From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call a thing on.
President Trump's attempt to reinstate his immigration ban got slapped down unanimously by an appeals court panel. Trump tweeted in all caps that he will see them in court. Democrats keep failing to block Trump's cabinet nominees, though the president is still outraged that it's taking so long to get people confirmed. But perhaps most of all, the president is angry with Nordstrom. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Josh Barrow, senior editor at Business Insider. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Robert Reich, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley and former Secretary of Labor under President Clinton. Our special guest is Megan McArdle of Bloomberg View. Welcome, everybody. So I was away on my honeymoon for the first 2 weeks of the Trump administration, and fortunately, very little happened. This week's news has been dominated by the litigation of Trump's executive order that prohibited entry to the United States for various groups, including citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries. After several days of chaos, a federal judge in Washington state issued a temporary restraining order stopping the whole ban while the courts would consider its legality. That restraining order was upheld on Thursday by a unanimous appeals court panel consisting of two Democratic appointees and one Republican. Rich, when I see conservative legal analysts discussing this ruling, I detect a certain amount of pain, which is to say, they seem to believe the courts should uphold this order, or at least large parts of the order, but they see an administration that has treated the litigation so haughtily and so ineptly that they have basically invited the courts to slap them down. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I think it's a terrible ruling, and what you would have done in the normal course of things, even if you wanted to hold up the temporary restraining order, would be to kick it back down to Judge Robart, who can have arguments about a preliminary injunction and get a sort of full trial record in his court and then bring it up to the Ninth Circuit again. But this has been mishandled from the beginning, the initial confusion over whether the order covered green card holders or not, the refusal to revise the executive order when they realized that it was a mistake to include green card holders and just having the White House counsel do it, and the almost criminal incompetence of the Justice Department lawyers who just have not argued this case at all and don't even know basic arguments in favor of the order, like the cases of folks from Iran, Iraq, and Somalia being arrested on domestic terrorism charges here in the United States. Repeatedly, judges have asked about that, and DOJ lawyers are basically said, oh, that's not my department. I don't know anything about it. And it looks as though the administration is going to have a desperately flawed strategy here to rush up to the Supreme Court, where probably the best case is a 4-4 tie, which will effectively uphold what the Ninth Circuit has done. So Trump is really in a legal box canyon here, unless he's willing to swallow some pride and go back and consider revising the executive order and fighting on better ground.
Robert, on some level, is what we're seeing here the system working? I mean, I feel like people's number one fear about a Trump administration has basically been constitutional crises and a collapse of institutions that provide checks on the presidency. But what's happened here is, you know, courts have ruled against Trump, and he's yelled and screamed and tweeted, and he called Judge Robart a so-called judge. But his agencies seem to be abiding by the court orders. He doesn't seem to be telling people to disregard the courts. I think we've learned in these first 3 weeks that a Trump presidency does appear to be constrained in much the same way that other presidencies are.
Well, thank goodness for small favors. You know, had Trump instructed the agencies to disregard the court order, then we would clearly be in the midst of a constitutional crisis. And I honestly don't know how we'd get out of it. I agree with Rich that it was sloppy. I mean, everything was sloppy. Not even consulting with the agencies involved in putting the order together, putting it together in a kind of haphazard way. Justice Department making ludicrous arguments. I mean, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they were if you read their opinion yesterday, they were flummoxed. They were outraged by the fact that the Justice Department was saying, in effect, once the president makes a national security decision, it is unreviewable by the courts. Well, that's just crazy. I don't know how the Justice Department ever came up with that peculiar argument. Should not have been the argument. And so we're left finally seeing that there are some constraints on the Trump administration. And I think the constraints that emerge are now the court system. Trump is doing whatever he can in his own inimitable way to undermine public confidence in that judiciary system, but that we just still do have a court system. And the other constraint is the press. And again, Trump is doing whatever he can to undermine public confidence in the free press, independent press. But that is the second constraint. And those two constraints are going to be, I think, growing in intensity as Trump doesn't swallow his pride, Rich. I mean, Trump doesn't swallow pride, just the opposite. He's just going to get more outrageous.
Megan, what do you make of the controversy specifically over the so-called judge tweet and the broader sort of attacks that Trump has made on the judiciary? I feel like there are sort of two tensions here. One is that he's been crude and tacky, and I think a lot of the complaints have been wrong. But it seems odd to me to sort of say that you're not allowed to criticize one of the three co-equal branches of government when it does something you don't like.
Well, I thought when Obama did this to the Supreme Court during a State of the Union address in 2010, it was a problem. Is that there are good reasons that you criticize rulings and not sort of make frontal attacks on the judiciary. It is a co-equal branch of government, and those norms matter. And Obama eroded them a little bit. Trump has gone much further, and this is, I should make it clear, this is worse. Although that's part of the reason that violating norms is bad, right, is you do a little bit and then the next person does more. I think that the so-called judge, it's not that he couldn't criticize the ruling, and that would have been completely fair, but saying a so-called judge, I mean, you know, he is called a judge because he was appointed to the judiciary by George Bush. He's not a fake judge. He's a real judge. And it sort of calls into question whether we have to honor the court system even when we disagree with their rulings, even when we don't necessarily think the judges did a good job, because sometimes judges don't, is that is a really dangerous territory for a liberal democracy to go in. And I think the danger with this is, at best, he's kind of made irresponsible comments, and at worst, that this is the beginning of more as he pushes the envelope further during the rest of his presidency. And that if that is his attitude now, then what does it look like 3 years from now?
Now, this is where I disagree. I think it's entirely legitimate for a president of the United States to criticize the court and to criticize court rulings. I think it was graceless for President Obama to do it during a State of the Union. I think it's crude what Trump said in that tweet about a so-called judge. But the president has a responsibility to uphold his view of the Constitution and what's constitutional. And the foremost advocate of this view in our history is Abraham Lincoln. Look back at what Lincoln and other Republicans said about the Taney Court, the Dred Scott Court. Now, of course, that's one of the most disgraceful decisions in American history. But Lincoln's view was that decision, it should apply to the litigants in that specific case, but otherwise have no bearing whatsoever. And he argued against it for years. When he was president, he acted as if it didn't exist and never accepted its legitimacy. And I don't think Democrats or liberals should have to accept the legitimacy of Citizens United. I don't think the pro-life movement should have to accept the legitimacy of Roe v. Wade. It's entirely part of our system for people to say the court is wrong, that it is erroneous in the way it's interpreted the Constitution, and to seek to force the court into a better, more appropriate understanding of the Constitution.
Rich, but again,
Raj, I think this is a red herring that you're bringing up. This is not a matter of a president criticizing a court outcome or a particular decision like Dred Scott. This problem is that, and it's come up with regard to the press, it's come up with regard to members of Congress, what Donald Trump is doing is using language that actually is designed to erode public confidence in the institution as a whole. He says the court is politicized. Too bad they're becoming so political. If there's a terrorist attack, they're going to be blamed. I mean, he uses this confrontational, derisive language designed to make people believe that an institution of our government, a co-equal institution of government, is not doing its job and is actually in some way conspiring against the public. I would be perfectly fine if Donald Trump said, I disagree for the following reasons with this decision. But this is much more insidious, much more dangerous to democracy.
Megan? I think there's a big difference between saying this is a terrible ruling. I'm not that comfortable, frankly, often with the way the presidents choose to do that. But there's a big difference between saying this is a terrible ruling, getting on Twitter and saying this so-called judge, he's political. That's a whole different level of territory. And, a lot of his defenders end up saying, well, you're overreacting. He's just on Twitter. Well, then he shouldn't be on Twitter. If he can't behave responsibly with it, then he needs to have his phone taken away until he's more mature. And that is something that I think is very worrying about his presidency, is these institutions are already quite fragile. Kind of democratic consensus about accepting the outcomes of these institutions, even if you hate them, accepting the outcome of the political and judicial processes, that's already under attack. And he is just throwing napalm on and lighting a match.
As Alexander Hamilton said about the judiciary, that has neither the sword nor the purse. All it has is public legitimacy. And for a president to try to undermine that undermines the system as a whole.
What you're defending in historical terms is the Stephen Douglas view of the court. The way he defended Dred Scott is, shut up, Mr. Lincoln. The court has spoken. And the other branches should have a view of what the Constitution is. And if they think the courts are wrong or overstepping their bounds, which the courts are in this instance, they should be subject to criticism and even harsh criticism. I wouldn't go about it the way Donald Trump has, but he's entirely within his rights to push back forcefully.
No, he's not. It's analogous to what he's done with the press. Although the press is obviously not officially a branch of government, it is the fourth estate. It's an unofficial branch. If we didn't have the press and the legitimacy of the press, we would actually be in trouble as a democracy. But for Donald Trump to say, as he did, I believe, this week, that the press is engaged in a kind of cover-up conspiracy with regard to terrorism. It hasn't been covering terrorism because, with a wink and a nod, he said, you know the reason, he told these military leaders. That, again, designed just as his attack on the courts to undermine public confidence, to make people feel as if there's kind of an underground conspiracy of the press to withhold information, that is dangerous because it leaves the only authority Donald Trump. That's what he wants to be. He wants to be in control.
I think the reason that I'm less freaked out about this than a lot of people is that Donald Trump's intentions aren't the only thing that matters here. It also matters whether his strategy is any good. And it may be his intention to delegitimize the judiciary, but when he does it in such a patently ridiculous way, and when he does it paired with a legal strategy that is so inept that he keeps losing to judges appointed by both Republicans and Democrats, I don't think he succeeds in delegitimizing the judiciary. So I think
only 2.5 weeks into the Trump presidency.
I know that, but think
of this going on for 4 years. I mean,
but
this is a drip of big lies and big insinuation.
The way you prevent him from delegitimizing the presidency is that you freak out when he tries to do it, right? I mean, it is true that this is not, right, like we are now not in an autocratic situation where, like, we now don't have democracy or so forth. But the way these things are protected is that when they happen, people freak out. If you don't freak out, if you say it's not that big a deal, well, then the next time he pushes a little further, well, how much worse is this? And you really actually do see this with, like, what Obama did to the Supreme Court at the State of the Union, right? Is that, well, Obama did it, so I guess it's okay if Trump did it. And that's a really emotionally resonant thing for his supporters. And I think, the hysteria is not over the actual import of this, which is, yes, he is losing and he has not succeeded in undermining the courts. The hysteria is that you stop it now instead of waiting until it's really bad and then trying to stop it then, at which point you will have had 9 other points that people can point back to and say, this is only a little bit worse than that.
We need to take a quick break, but let us know what you think about the appropriate level of freakout 3 weeks into the Donald Trump administration on our Facebook page, or you can message us on Twitter. We are at LRCKCRW. Up ahead, Nordstrom. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Josh Barrow of Business Insider and MSNBC. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton, and author of the book Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few. Megan McArdle of Bloomberg View is also with us. So I'll get to Nordstrom in a second, but I just sort of want to start off our second half by saying that I think one of the key themes we've seen out of the White House in the first 3 weeks of this administration is Donald Trump and his staff sort of running into reality, and things that they thought they were going to be able to change, they can't, or they can't so quickly. There were these reports that the president of China was giving Trump the silent treatment because Trump had edged away from the One China policy and taken that call with Taiwan's president. On Thursday, Trump announced that he has committed to support the One China policy, and that he committed to that on a call with Xi. So that was a fold to China. Trump has indicated that he might not move the U.S. embassy in Israel to Jerusalem after all. It's been sort of a tradition for candidates to promise to do this and then not do it. People thought Trump might actually make good on that. He seems to be understanding why previous administrations haven't done that. There was supposed to be a lightning strike against Obamacare. That's what the Trump people were saying soon after he was elected. Now they're saying they have to take it slow. They don't want to act too fast on health care like Barack Obama did. Obama, of course, took 14 months to sign the Affordable Care Act after he entered office. And then we've been seeing what's going on with the U.S. Senate, where Democrats have not been able to stop Donald Trump's cabinet nominations, but they have been slowing them down. And then Trump, because of his own bureaucratic problems on the executive branch side, has made very few appointments at the subcabinet level. And we're seeing, for example, in the difficulty handling this litigation over the executive order, that trying to run an administration without much staff and without much expertise leads to you not achieving very much of what you thought you were going to. And so I look at this and I see a Trump administration that's likely to achieve a lot less of what it thinks it wants to do than it actually set out to. I still worry about what they will do by accident, but I think the last 3 weeks have been a reason to worry less than we might have about what the president will do on purpose. Am I wrong about that?
I completely disagree with you, Josh. I think that what we see is a White House that certainly is confronting political reality, but a president who is temperamentally continues to be completely unqualified and unsuited for this job, maybe even with a personality disorder that could become increasingly dangerous as he gets more and more frustrated, who he's not learning anything. He doesn't learn. I mean, this is a man who is wholly formed at the age of 70 as an adolescent. And I, quite frankly, worry that as reality sets in on him, he's going to get more and more cranky and desperate and frustrated and nasty try to bring the house down.
Megan, what do you think?
It's not necessarily clear what his staffers want, right? So if you look at something like the immigration executive orders, yes, they were kind of a shambles and a disaster. And if you assume that what they were actually trying to do was the executive orders, then that was a bad plan. But, there's a kind of possibility that, like, what they want is to provoke the crisis, is that what they want is the publicity. Because, in fact, like, large majorities of Americans seem to like these executive orders, even though they were badly done and so forth. I mean, I think that's maybe an unduly cynical way of looking at it, but there's some element of that, is that you've basically got kind of two factions within the White House. You have traditional Republican people who are in the cabinet, who are in the foreign policy, mostly in the foreign policy sector. And then you have people like Bannon and Miller. And Bannon and Miller are radicals, right? They're bomb throwers. They want to get out there and shake things up, stir up the pot, get a lot of publicity for what they're doing. To his people, Trump is a hero, and potentially more of a hero than he would have been if things had gone better, because they see it. It's on the news all the time. It's really visible. So, I'm not sure we shouldn't worry what they'll do in the future, because in some ways this is going to embolden them.
Rich, what do you make of that?
Well, I would say a couple things. Yes, in important respects, they're running up against reality, which happens to every administration. It's possible that Megan's interpretation of what Bannon and Miller were up to with the executive order, which is that they wanted in part to sow chaos, to create more noise and emotional charge around this issue, that's possible. I think it was really more a product of an understaffed, amateurish administration. off to a shambolic start in certain ways, which also isn't unusual for new administrations. So there's no
it's somewhat
doubt,
unusual,
although,
right?
Well, look at the entire books are written about Bill Clinton's rough start out of the gate. And I would say, you know, I don't entirely discount the worries that Bob has, but I think so far, you know, the strongest evidence of it is we have tweets that show unfortunate aspects of Donald Trump's character. But on what so far in the first 3 weeks, and we're still just 3 weeks in, what has, as far as we know, been his most enduring and important decision, the nomination of Judge Gorsuch, was a wonderful choice. It was a professional process. He consulted the right people and chose the right man. So I think from where I sit, the jury is still out.
Rich, I was there at the start of the Clinton administration. I know what transitions are like. I was in charge of the economic transition. Don't tell me that this is sort of typical of transitions. This is the worst and most bizarre transition I have ever seen. For a president to get on the phone with foreign heads of state and berate them, I mean, berate the head of Australia, the prime minister of Australia, for a promise that the previous administration made in terms of taking refugees, this really is not normal, and I think any attempt to normalize this does a disservice fundamentally to the American people.
Let me challenge you. So you have Judge Gorsuch, widely respected. Even Democrats who have worked with him say he's a wonderful and independent judge. You've seen a demonstration of his independence in real time on what he's been saying on Capitol Hill about how he was disheartened by Donald Trump's remarks, and you think Donald Trump is a budding authoritarian. Do you support Gorsuch's nomination to the court as an independent constitutionalist jurist?
Well, I think you put your finger on the one thing that Donald Trump has done that might pass the kind of normal test. But that is the one thing in the last 3 weeks. I mean, look at the conflicts of interest that keep on mounting almost every day. I mean, we were going to talk about this business with Nordstrom. I mean, that's a good example. What in the world is the president doing, kind of castigating Nordstrom for not carrying or deciding not to carry his daughter's line of products? I mean, there's a free market out there. And if people don't want to buy something, even if they are organized in a boycott and not to buy it, then they should have the privilege of not buying it, and a department store should have the privilege of deciding not to sell it. I mean, the International Hotel.
My point
is,
if you really think this is a moment when normal politics are out the window and we have to stop this budding authoritarianism, you should embrace Judge Gorsuch. Everyone who thinks like you do about Donald Trump should embrace Judge Gorsuch, who is clearly
an independent, respectable judge.
And if you really want to stop, you know, authoritarianism in this country, this is a way to do it.
I think maybe one way to thread this needle is to divide things into things Trump cares about and things Trump doesn't care about. And things Trump cares about are his family dynastic wealth. He cares about immigration. He doesn't care about the Supreme Court. He never did care about the Supreme Court. And so that stuff is going to proceed normally. We hope that foreign policy will be among that stuff. You know, when he gets his dander up on an issue that he cares about, like refugees, he goes rogue, right? And so that, I think, is going to be the pattern for this administration, is that you're going to actually kind of have two administrations, one with fairly normal Republican stuff happening, and two with weird Trump stuff that no one can predict happening.
Rich, one question about the Nordstrom story, which is, this is, you know, the president tweeting that Nordstrom has treated his daughter so unfairly by dropping her fashion line, blah, blah, blah. We've talked some before on this show about Jason Chaffetz, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, who was planning to go very doggedly after Hillary Clinton if she won. And Rich, you've said that you don't expect much from him in terms of oversight of the Trump administration. This action and Kellyanne Conway going on television in front of the White House seal and saying that people should buy Ivanka's products online seems to have been the thing that put Chaffetz in a position where he felt he had to engage in oversight. And he sent a letter to the White House actually urging the Office of Government Ethics to recommend sanctions against Kellyanne Conway for this inappropriate use of her office. And I guess the question is this: on some level, this story feels trivial, but it feels like a thing that was just so indefensible that maybe it's the thing that starts Republicans where they have to do some sort of ethics reining in of Donald Trump.
Maybe. I'm still skeptical you're going to see robust oversight anytime soon from the Republican Congress. And I'm not sure why this is the thing that tipped Chaffetz over the edge. I think part of it is that it's easier to shoot at Kellyanne Conway than it is at Trump. And obviously, his tweet was inappropriate. What she said was inappropriate. Perhaps it's easiest for him to push back on this when he's doing it against a White House aide rather than the president himself.
We've reached that time once again for our famed Left, Right, and Center rants featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Meghan McArdle, what's on your mind?
Oh, ineffective protests, counterproductive protests. You know, protest energy is very high on the left right now. And I think what you're seeing is a lot of people who don't have a good sense of how protest works and what it actually does to kind of motivate other people to actually vote for things that you want. And so you've got this phenomenal outpouring of opposition to Trump. I'm not in any way criticizing people who show up for the Women's March or so forth. But you also have people like the Black Bloc, people who showed up on Inauguration Day to burn things. And then you have people like the people who blocked Education Secretary Betsy DeVoe today at a DC school and prevented her from entering. This is wildly counterproductive because what it does is actually empower the very person they say they're trying to fight by turning this into a battle between Donald Trump and the forces of order. I would love to see protesters thinking a little more clearly about what's actually successful and not doing silly things that hurt their own cause.
Robert Reich.
Just on that note, Jason Chaffetz actually confronted over 1,000 of his constituents in Salt Lake City who were angry about his failure to investigate Donald Trump's taxes and his failure to actually disclose his taxes. And I think that's a very effective. If you can go to town meetings like that with your be a constituent and make a fuss with a member of Congress and confront that member of Congress at a town meeting, you're having a big effect. I think Jason Chaffetz really did learn something.
Rich Lowry.
I have a word for Atlanta Falcon fans who are on the receiving end of a comeback that would have been remarkable on any given Sunday, but was truly historic in a Super Bowl. As a Yankee fan who suffered through our epic collapse to the Red Sox in 2004, let me assure Atlanta supporters that the sting of this defeat will eventually go away in about 10 or 15 years.
It never has.
For my rant, one interesting thing that did not happen in the first 3 weeks of the Trump administration is that he did not issue an executive order rescinding executive orders from the Obama administration that required government contractors not to discriminate against lesbian and gay employees. There had been a draft executive order. There had sort of been an expectation that he would do this, and he didn't. And the press reporting talked about how Jared and Ivanka urged him not to do it. But I think fundamentally the reason the president didn't issue this order is that he doesn't care about LGBT issues. And he assessed correctly that there were going to be greater political costs to issuing the order than from not issuing it. And this raises a strategic point for all sorts of interest groups that want things from the Trump administration on what I think Megan correctly assesses are the large set of issues that Donald Trump really does not care about. When you have a president who is quite unideological and who also has his party quite over a barrel politically, it doesn't have to deliver them every single thing that they are expecting him to deliver. You need to figure out how to put him in a position where he judges that he's better off not doing the thing that you don't want, given that he doesn't care about whether you get the thing you want or not. That's all we have time for today. I want to thank Rich Lowry, Robert Reich, and Meghan McArdle. Laura Dinemillion produced today's program. Our technical director is JC Swadek. Katie Burskins is our production assistant. I'm Josh Barrow. Thank you for joining us, and tune in next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes and share your comments at kcrw.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.